Blog Talk Radio.
Time. Don't forget now, next week it's going to be Eastern Standard Time. Our regular hosts are Steve Thompson, Chuck Albright, Howard Beauty, George Jen, Lois Delano, Cecile Intriago, Neil Holland, and me, I'm Jim Hart. Our hosts, if you have followed our show, are scattered from South Florida, North Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, New York, and Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. Whoops, that was me a couple of weeks ago. I'm here now in Royal Palm Beach, Florida. How about it, host? Do you want to check in?
Hi, everyone. This is Steve up in Roaring Gap, North Carolina, where the temperature is now 59 degrees, and we've had some light rain today. Sorry you've missed the peak leaf color season. The leaves are now falling and waiting for next year. So it was not a bright leaf fall, but it was nonetheless beautiful. Jim?
Okay, this is Chuck Albright, and I'm at the Villages here in Central Florida. And we don't have as cool a temperature as you had there, Steve, but we are in the 70s now. And we don't get into the 90s anymore. So all our snowbirds are down here, all 30,000 of them. And they're in there running around the golf courses and into the theaters and over to our restaurants and stuff. And we're having all our parades now, Oktoberfest and some of the other types of parades that we have. Everybody's out playing golf from the time the sun comes up in the morning until it sinks over in the west, I guess. We have people out on the golf course. I guess that's about it from the Central Florida.
Well, hey, Chuck, this is Neil. And do you have any problems when all those snowbirds come to the Villages? As far as driving their golf carts, are they like in New England? Are they try to, use bad driving manners, or can you notice a difference?
We know who the snowbirds are by the way they do drive cars and golf carts. They tend to be a lot slower than the residents because the residents know where the policemen are.
There you go. Hey, we've got Jim Graybill is with us tonight. How are things? Where are you now, Jim? Kentucky?
No. We moved from good old Kentucky back down to Atlanta, living on the side of a mountain down here called Little Kennesaw in Kennesaw, Georgia. It's beautiful here where we are now, and I guess the low tonight's supposed to be in the mid-50s. So, but it's nice to be back in Georgia and around all our friends down here, particularly all our Kentucky friends.
Well, good to have you back. I know you've been gone for a few weeks, and the moving, I'm going to hopefully, I've got to transition from my present home, hopefully we'll sell it, over to the World Golf Village, which is about 10 miles away, and we'll be moving again And we move every 4 or 5 years, whether we want to or not. But we stay one step ahead of the law, I guess. But here in beautiful Ponte Vedra, which is halfway between St. Augustine, Florida, the country's oldest city, and Jacksonville, Florida, home of the Jaguars. Although we've had a real unsuccessful year this year, we have had no wins, but we did send our Jaguars over to London. Perhaps they might want to stay over there. But at any rate, the temperature is really nice. It's in the low 50s and in the high 70s, mid-70s, high 70s. And that's probably the thermostat in heaven when you get there. Jim?
Yep. Okay, folks, if you plan to call in, you need to call us at one of these two numbers. Call 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. When you hear the live conversations of our hosts, then be sure to just press number 1 on your phone keypad to connect live with us. Otherwise, you'll be just listening into the show over your telephone. It's easier to just listen also by going to our website at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie, or you can go to the EAL Radio Show's website at www.ealradioshow.com and click on the radio icon shown on the home page. On the home page, you can scroll down and find our Facebook page where you can click just to listen in. When you go to our website, perhaps you will join the nearly 750 Eastern Airlines people and friends who have chosen to be with us. There is so much to see and so much to do on the website. Why not join us while you're on the website? Neil, who is our sponsor tonight?
Well, we're going to introduce our sponsor for the next few shows tonight, and I've chosen a theme song for him, so I'm going to play that theme song and tell you a little bit about what we're going to do as far as sponsorship with this new sponsor. So sit back and relax and enjoy a song by a crooner known as Frank Sinatra.
Let's take a boat to Bermuda. Let's take a plane to St. Paul. Let's grab a kayak, Quincy or Nyack. Let's get away from it all. Let's take a trip in a trailer. No need to come back at all. Let's take a powder to Boston for chowder. Let's get away from it all. We'll travel around from town to town. We'll visit every state. I repeat, I love you, sweet, in all the 48. Let's go again to Niagara. This time we'll peek at the fall. Let's leave our hut, dear, get out of our rut, dear. Let's get away from it all. We'll travel round from town to town. We'll visit every state. And I'll repeat that I love you, sweet, in all of 48. Let's go again to Niagara. This time we'll dig the fall. Let's leave our hut, dear, get out of our rut, dear. Let's get away from it all.
Boy, if that's a song for a travel agency, I've never heard one. We've got John Ruth's, and I guess the last name is like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Most of us have heard of Ruth's Chris. I don't eat there very often because I can't afford to eat there. I wonder if John has an interest in that Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. But John Ruth's has been in the travel agency business, I think, ever since Eastern went out of business. He's been doing a great job. So he's been on our show occasionally and as a listener and a contributor, calling in from time to time. So I came up with the idea, hey, John, why don't you see if you can develop a trip or two, and let's publish it on the website and see if you can give our listeners, Eastern folks, a special discount and come up with a trip and see if you can get people to book a trip, whether it's a cruise trip or a flight somewhere, and an interesting trip. I guess Europe, some places in Europe are popular now, and other places, especially the Middle East, you have to watch where you're going. But he's decided that, or he's volunteered that, yeah, he'd like to do that. Of course, it's good for his business as well. So therefore, he'd be one of our sponsors. So John will be talking about a trip here in the next next show, next Monday or the following Monday, whenever you come up with one. And so we want to hear some special trips that might be of interest to our listeners that they can sign up. And we used to do that with the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. We had one of our Eastern pilots that had a travel agency down in Miami, and he would put together with each issue of our magazine that was published there were three publications a year, and he would come up with three different trips for those that wanted to sign up for them. So kind of got the idea from the Repartee magazine when I was the editor of that magazine. And so we're going to try this and see what kind of interesting places he has that our listeners might be interested in going. I know we've got some free time here since we haven't been working lately. So that's the plan for a travel discussion, and we can ask him questions as well. So that's what I've got, Jim Hart. I'm going to, if you don't mind at this time, I'm going to crank up the engine to start our show. So here's another little sound effect that I have.
Go to it.
I want to crank the engine up to see if you guys remember the sound of this engine.
Roll. Clear.
Oh, boy.
That's a constellation.
Fantastic. Sure sounds like it.
A super
sounds like my old
right.
Stearman. But at least one thing we know, Jim Graybill and Steve Thompson and Chuck, especially Chuck, since he's a mechanic, it is a piston-driven engine.
That's true.
Of course. I tell sounded like that, I wouldn't fly it.
You could also say it may be an AT-6.
Yeah, it sounds like an AT. Sounds like my old Stearman. I used to have a round engine Stearman.
450, yes.
Yeah, well, no, I wasn't able. We had a 225 Continental round engine.
Mm.
But it sounds like that. All round engines sound, I don't know, but there's a lot of similarity in the sounds of them. It's kind of like a Harley Davidson. Yeah, sound.
Yep. Neil, Cecile has asked me to help her out with her part tonight, so should I continue?
Yes, please.
Okay, you know, Cecile says that she'd like to mention to our listeners that they can listen to episode 136 for the news about Eastern Airlines as told by Mr. Ed Weigel, the president of Eastern's estate. He and his team are working on putting the airline back into the air, perhaps as early as next year. We're all excited to hear their plans, and I was particularly impressed with some that have been selected to be on the board of directors. The mayor of Miami, a former United States Secretary of Transportation, a retired general, and others. It sounds as if they are looking for the best advisors and decision makers for the introduction of the new Eastern back into the air. Steve, was there any one thing that seemed to impress you?
Well, Jim, it was money, just pure and simple. I was, and I still am worried that they would not be able to secure the financial backing needed to receive the dot fitness of their business plan. The FAA certification, I'm not that worried about. It seems that from what he said, that they have that part of the team in place and are trying to secure offices in the old Eastern Building 5A in Miami. If I remember, he said that they had two major investors at this time that would put them over the top with the required financial support. He didn't say, but I would think China might be one of the players, since they would like to introduce their new commercial jet when it becomes available.
Hey, Steve.
Well,
excuse me, Chuck, but on that DOT certification, I remember when I was involved in the certification of a new carrier up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, back in the early 90s, after Eastern folded. I was invited to be on the team to put together an airline up there. And it was a no-frill airline, kind of like Southwest at the time. Matter of fact, they copied a lot of the business plan from Southwest. But at any rate, the first thing we had to do was get the DOT, the Department of Transportation, approval, which was the financial fitness of the carrier to operate. And then once that was received, we put together a team that did the FAA certification, and we all got together up in Pittsburgh and did all that. We used to have charts spread all over the walls. I'm sure it's a lot easier now. It's probably done on the computer, but golly, we used to have the whole wall of the house that we all met in just wallpapered with things that we had to do in order to get the FAA certification. But like you say, that shouldn't be a problem. But the financial problem, the money part of it, is the big deal. And we used to, back in the early 90s, had to come up with $15 million, kind of like a reserve account that, if we somehow or another went out of business or whatever, we had money to secure those folks that were hung out to dry as far as investing in tickets and so forth. So, that is one of the big, big problems in starting an airline. And I was glad to hear from what Ed Weigel said that they have the money in place for that. So hopefully they're full bore now in trying to get the FAA certification. Chuck, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And continue on here. That commercial jet that Steve was talking about, that would be the Comac C919 commercial jet. From what I can find out about this aircraft, it has a capacity of about 190 passengers. It's similar to the Airbus 320, which Eastern plans to initiate to put into service when their commercial operation starts. I also believe his plan to initially contract other carriers for the maintenance for the aircraft, it's a pretty good idea, as long as you get the mechanics to know the aircraft that you have. Airline using, the same aircraft would be a whole lot easier than trying to put all the paperwork for approving this part of the operation. Contracts a lot of these departments to providers that would already have an FAA-approved and could put things together a lot quicker. That would be, in my opinion, a pretty smart move. George, do you have a comment?
Well, George's not with us, but we do have a caller on the line. Hang on a second. area code looks like 678. Who's with area code 6? Oh, that's you, Jim Graybill.
Yeah, I got to. I missed listening to Mr. Weeks' presentation the other day. Are they still planning on a flight training down in Miami?
Yeah, that's.
Are they going to be in competition with Boeing? Because Boeing's
that's a good question.
All there.
I think Steve or someone asked him that last week.
I did. Yeah.
Okay, Jim.
I think George
what
was
you
gonna...
remember his answer? What answer did he
be
give us?
Pretty healthy competition, isn't it?
Apparently, he feels that the program they're going to put together is a bit different from what is being offered by Boeing. And he felt that they're going to proceed with it, and they're very confident that it will be successful.
In what respect is it going to be different?
He didn't go into those facts, but, gosh, I guess we have to accept what he says because he is such a knowledgeable individual.
Yeah. I think all of us were impressed with his background.
I think right now we all have had the same idea, which was brought up just a moment ago, is, you know, those planes that he's buying, the Airbuses, they're not exactly cheap. And the last time I heard, they only had like $300 million. So I'm kind of inclined to believe what he said, that he had the money, but I'm inclined to believe that the Chinese are going to come up with the money.
Well, don't forget,
I think they're
going to
go a partnership.
Don't forget, Chuck, if you've got $300 million, that'll buy about two airplanes.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe 737s, but at any rate, I think they leveraged that out with the bankers and the financing terms in buying those airplanes, I would imagine. And so $350 million or whatever the requirement is that they were looking for is not going to be earmarked just for the purchase of airplanes. I was hoping, matter of fact, I wanted to ask Ed Weigel that Embraer is putting out a commercial jet that it's probably in the range of the larger 737 aircraft. And wouldn't that be something if they could talk with Embraer to find out maybe this airplane would fit in with our routes that we're going to fly, especially if we're going to fly through the Caribbean or the Caribbean, however you want to pronounce it, and Central and South America, and not any long over, long range trips down to the southern part or middle part of South America. Companies that are introducing aircraft like Embraer, and that's been a pretty solid airplane in the past of their commuter aircraft, and I think they'll turn out a real fine product with their new commercial, larger version of an aircraft. So, area code 954, where are you calling from?
Area code
954
is Fort Lauderdale area.
Is that Fort Lauderdale?
Hi, Jim. It's Cecile. I'm sorry I was late.
Cecile, how are you?
I'm sorry. Good.
Good to have you with us tonight. All right. Well, we've been talking, and George Jen, by the way, is one of our hosts, and he called me earlier and said, Neil, I've got a chance to go out tuna fishing, so you guys will have to carry my part. And he's out fishing for tuna up in New York. So he said that he didn't know whether the weather was going to be good enough for him to go out. But he emailed me just before the showtime, and he says, yeah, it's good. We're going fishing. So here's what George was going to talk about, and it's in reference to what Chuck was talking about, contracting out most of the services. Even the training can be contracted to another carrier that has the approval for training of personnel that need to be trained according to the FARs, Federal Air Regulations. it sounded like they are still proceeding with the plans to put together a training facility in Miami. And even though Boeing just moved all of their training from the state of Washington to Miami, pilots, flight attendants, and other airline personnel training like reservations could be farmed out. Once the airline is up and running, there is plenty of time to see what you want to put under the direct control of the Eastern Corporation. So I especially like the business plan of flying from Miami to South and Central America and through the Caribbean countries. That's where the money is. Jim, did you hear anything said about reservations?
Yeah, in fact, before that, Neil, I think what we have to keep in mind is that we're not only talking about U.S. airlines. We're talking about airlines all over the world, and especially the young ones that don't have access to training facilities like what we are able to put together. It's unbelievable what we can do if we do it the right way, and I think that Ed Wiegel is going about it the right way. He's keeping in touch with the other airlines. In fact, through Vito Borelli, who is at our Eastern Airlines Retirees Association, Vito is, in fact, a past president, and he tunes into us almost every night. But Vito has been pretty instrumental in keeping contact with other major airlines all over the world. And, of course, when we receive our Eastern Airlines newsletter every month, you'll see in there all the airlines that Vito has been able to put together, giving us airline reduced-rate transportation. So I really feel that that's what we are going to be concentrating on, not only U.S. airlines, but airlines all over the world. And the one thing that I remembered, Neil, talking about reservations, we talked about so much that night, but the one thing that I remembered, they talked about old System 1 that Eastern owned and about Andreas, I guess the new system. Well, I've got to remind friends and listeners that back in the 1960s, when we still had round tables at the reservations offices, you all who are longtime airline people will remember we had a Lazy Susan, a great big round thing, and each one of those little slots they had at the Lazy Susan had an airline number in it. So if it was flight number 527 going to Hartford, it's in one box. And all the people that joined flight 527, regardless of where they joined, they were in that box. Now, the problem was that if I was looking at flight 527 and someone around the other side got a telephone call, hey, I want to know about 527. Well, you know, you'd yell across the table, who's got 527? So on. But, you know, shortly after that, the major computer-assisted program was called Sperry Rand UNIVAC. That was the very first one that we had. And that eliminated, for all purposes, the round table. It didn't happen overnight, but I'm glad it didn't, because there were bugs in the whole program. The Sperry Rand UNIVAC system would allow you to call in on a certain telephone number, whether you were a travel agent or a traveling passenger. Well, sometimes those telephone calls would go into a blank. No one would answer. They would ring and ring and ring. And they would hang up, and the next one they would call would be me, the district sales manager, or the city sales manager, saying, hey, what's going on with that UNIVAC system? I can't reach anyone. No one answers. Well, they ironed that system out, and eventually that did evolve into System 1. I have to tell you that in the UNIVAC system, I was in the home office as a, what would you call it, jack of all trades, master of none. They would send me out in troubleshooting in various areas, and I went to so many UNIVAC system areas, and then System 1 areas, trying to iron out some of the problems. Finally, we got them ironed out. Travel agents were happy. Passengers were happy. But then when Mr. Weigel mentioned the new system, Amadeus, I am not familiar with that at all. I wish I could speak more freely about it, and I wish that any one of our listeners who are on board tonight could come on in and tell us a bit about what they know about the Amadeus system. It's supposed to be the latest thing there is. And I think, of course, the differences would be that, going back to the 60s again, I thought, hey, here we go with a computerized system, and there's nothing that computers can't do. So I got in touch with my friends at Hilton Hotels, and they said, Jim, your idea sounds good. I made the idea or the proposal to them that we put Hilton Hotels into our UNIVAC system. Sell the hotel, sell the airline, all in one call. Wow, they thought this was great. So they sent me to the Palmer House in Chicago, and I met with high-flying, Hilton Hotels people. I just don't know what. The best thing about that meeting was the sole fish. Sole dinner that I had. It was the best fish that I had away from the salt water ever. Unfortunately, that meeting didn't culminate into anything. However, it did happen later on. I was like the Hopmobile. Remember the car that was before its time? And so many things were before their time. I was before my time when it suggested putting hotels into our airline reservation system. Well, that's really it, I think, right now, Neil. But, folks,
well,
if you have comments about Mr. Weigel's interview regarding the plans of the new Eastern, please give us a call at 1-213-816-1611 or toll-free at 1-877-572-1861. We would just love to hear from you. Now, we want to share a few Eastern memories. If you ever were big Eastern, I'm sure you've had someone that, some of the incidents that you remember with a smile. Call us. Tell us about your memories. Steve, would you tell us about an experience you remember? It doesn't have to be directly related to Eastern, but it should be an aviation story. Steve?
Yeah. Hey, before Steve starts his story, we've got a couple of callers online. I want to see if we can interrupt our little discussion here. Area code 215, are you with us, and would you like to make a comment?
Hi, Neil. It's John Roots. How are you?
Hey, John. We were talking about you earlier, and you just
I heard. My ears were burning.
I say, John, how bad were your ears burning there?
Nah, they weren't bad. I just wanted to make the comment that if you want to see a graphic depiction of how Amadeus functions, you can go to my website.
Give us your website.
www.travelingsquad.com.
Traveling?
Traveling, TRAVELING, squad.com. It's basically a consumer website, but it's running on Amadeus.
All right.
Very good.
And it covers cruise lines, airlines, hotels, cars, vacation packages, just about anything you can throw at it. It gives you tips on, travel destinations. It gives you, background information on cities and destinations, things like that. It's rather comprehensive, so I think you'd probably enjoy looking at it.
Very good.
And,
all right.
So feel free to look at it,
and
John, you'll be getting some stuff for me in the near future from that.
Very good. John, we will be talking with you in the next few shows, and we'll hear more about your travel suggestions. Both on the website, www.ealradioshow.com, and also on the air. Also, we have an area code 770 that's popped up. Is that Sonny? Is that you?
Yeah, this is Sonny. Good evening to y'all.
Good evening, Sonny. Always glad to have you on the show.
Well, I'm just listening to the show tonight. I don't particularly have a comment other than I know Ed has got really an uphill battle starting a new airline at this time right now. He's got his hands full, and I wish him the best.
Yeah. Yeah, it is going to be a major thing, and if he's got the right people, and they've got the desire to get Eastern in the air again, I hope that we will see it sometimes next year. I think he said sometimes around this time of next year, 2014, as I recall.
I think that was his projection. Yes.
Yeah. How's everything over in Delta Airlines?
Delta Airlines is doing just fine.
How's everything with the FAA?
Everything with the FAA is really well. We're back at work. You know, we were off for 2 weeks there with when they shut the government down, and it really slowed everything down over at Delta. We couldn't approve their 717s or the new airplanes we were bringing online, so it put them behind a good bit. Actually, a couple of weeks it put them behind on just about everything. So, but we're back now.
Is that a Boeing airplane, 717?
Well, the Boeing is the 717. They're getting three 717s a month and two 737-900s a month. So they're getting five airplanes a month right now.
Wow.
And the old 717. It was it started off as a Douglas. I think an MD-95 is what it started off as, and then they went out and Boeing bought them, and it turned into a Boeing 717. But basically, it's a DC-9. The wings are the same. It's a computerized DC-9 is what it is.
Yeah.
Just for a question, how many aircraft do you have now?
Delta has 767 right now.
Wow. Wow.
Do they still have the L-1011s?
No, that's retired.
I don't think
actually,
anybody.
Actually, a good, very good friend of mine retired. He retired from Delta about 10 years ago when he was on the 1011, and they retired that shortly thereafter.
10 years.
It was a good airplane in its day.
Yeah. It was ahead of its time.
Still is a good airplane.
Is that the airplane that we had an episode? I think it was 136. Where the airplane took off from Miami for Nassau and lost three engines?
Yes, it was.
Yeah
due to the oil ring.
We've got on as one of our hosts, Steve Thompson, who was a check captain on that very flight. Steve?
Yes, I remember that well.
I bet you did.
It ended up at Delta Airlines. And I think the number at Delta, I believe it was 767, I don't recall now, but I know it ended up at Delta, and of course they retired it.
I think Delta got all of our 1011s, didn't they? We had, what,
I think
total
they did,
28?
Yeah, except the one in the Everglades, of course.
Yeah, well, it stayed. Yeah. Question, you guys. The old Eastern System 1, didn't Lorenzo take that to Continental?
Yes. He stole it. I'm sorry. He transferred it.
Right. He transferred it over?
Stole it.
Well, Steve, just got some more stories here.
Well, I want to talk to Cecile just a moment. We haven't heard from her, air code 954. No, that's not Cecile.
Yeah, hi.
Yes, it is.
What are you doing in air code 954? Is that a South Florida area code?
Yeah, that's Fort Lauderdale. Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale, okay.
Fort Lauderdale. That's me. I'm here.
Okay,
Aria,
you're here. You're here, and... We're glad that you're here, and we talked to you a little bit last week about the company that you work for. Let's put in a plug for RE/MAX. Can you think of something good to say about your company, Cecile?
Sure, I can. But may I detour to a security story?
When I was,
for those that weren't in tune last week, I worked in security under Ernie Dunham and Jack Shields. And one of the security stories was there was a lot of pilfering going on in baggage, as there is, I think, United Airlines topped the ladder when we were back in those years. Anyway, they needed a female FBI agent, and they didn't have one, so they asked my boss if I could go to the airport and do a part. And my boss, Jack Shields, said, absolutely not. And I said, oh, please, please. I always wanted to be an FBI agent, but I was too short, and they didn't hire females at that time. I'm only 5'2". So in any event, I did get the assignment, and what it was going to Miami Airport, and you have my assignment was just to look at the clock when the bag went down. And they gave me a bag that was very expensive, a Louis Vuitton or whatever it was, and they gave me some jewelry that looked very expensive. And long story short, the bag got hit in 3 minutes in the belly of the aircraft. They had set up the bag with dust, whatever that powder is, and a $500 bill. Well, the bill was gone, but they didn't catch the person. They knew who it was. They just had to have the evidence. They didn't catch the person on that run, but they did catch them three days later, and it was a ring. It was a ring that would communicate by phone, and they would say, hit this bag. And anyway, that's how pilferers got caught, and they got caught. And unfortunately, they were really not very smart because one of them was so close to retirement with Eastern, and, of course, he lost all his benefits. But the main lesson with this is never put real valuables in your bag, and it still goes on today, but it's just more, you know, and they do catch him eventually. So that was an interesting venture. And
I have a question for Cecile, Neil. Cecile, do you know very much about the lost baggage people? And I understand that they are auctioning off all of these bags and so on. Do you know much about that?
Well, I did work in, you mean the bags that they auction without opening them up to see what's in them?
No, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, they do it at the airport. I think it's run by the Miami Airport, and what they do is they do it at a warehouse somewhere. I can get you the information, but what they do is they auction all bags that are unclaimed. You don't know what you're bidding on. You bid on a bag, and you could have a diamond in a bag, or you could have just a bunch of clothes in the bag. The main thing is when you're traveling, which I'm sure us airline people know, is always put your name inside the bag.
Yes.
I worked in baggage claim when they were moving us around, and we could never identify. You try to match the pieces with the person, but if it would just put their names in the bag, bags wouldn't be lost. But that's what they do. They auction them off, and I think they give the money to charity or something. But I can research.
Okay. All right, very good. You know, Jim, I don't want to take your introduction here, but we do have Steve Thompson has a very interesting story that he told me a couple of weeks ago, and we've been trying to share that story with our listeners
Great.
Over the past two weeks. So, Steve, you're up at bat, my friend. So tell us a very...
Thank you, Neil.
Nice story about South America and your experiences down there.
Thank you, Neil. Like you said, this does not directly relate to Eastern, and God knows I have plenty of Eastern stories, but I think that the listeners will find it very interesting. To give you a little background how I ended up on this particular trip, in 2004, I went to Alaska, and I worked for an avionics manufacturer who sold the avionics system, which is commonly called an EFA system, for small airplanes in Alaska. As you know, to get around in Alaska, you either fly or you float. And there are lots of small airplane operators in southeast Alaska, and most of them are float planes. And they had this expensive equipment, which was given to them by the FAA. So I worked for them in Alaska for 3 years, and then I came back and I was a certified instructor for them, and also in sales with them. So as a certified instructor, I get a call from someone in Venezuela, and who had bought an airplane that had this equipment in it, and they had no idea how to operate it. So he wanted me to come to Venezuela to teach he and his co-pilot how to use this equipment. Now, I suppose if someone asked you if you would travel to a country that's hostile to the United States to teach someone a technology in a language that they understand very little of, and whose friend who lives there, who I worked with, told me of the rampant crime that exists, and one of the favorite things that they do is kidnap people, and who cautioned me about wearing anything of value that is visible, and I should always guard my wallet. If somebody asks you to go there, you probably say no. Well, some of you said that, and I'm addressing this to my family, said no, and I did not listen, and now I went on the trip, and I'm on my way back to the U.S., and it's June the 2nd in 2008 in a business class on American, thanks to my son, Chip, who works for American. And this trip ranks very high on an anxiety level, if not at the top. It began when I left Savannah on Thursday, the 29th of May, for Miami, then to Caracas, Venezuela. I contracted the pilot of the Shelton equipment that I just mentioned, who had never had any training on the equipment whatsoever. Now, from the time that I left Savannah until I got back to Miami, I'm not sure I heard a word of English, maybe except on the airplane. I got to Miami and felt a lot of nostalgia when looking at hangars that I saw for so many years that said Eastern Airlines. I text messaged my son telling him that I could not find the Eastern counter. Well, he has a great sense of humor, and he promptly replied that they moved it over next to Pan Am. What is sad that almost all my grandchildren were not born when the company went out of business, and that's Eastern, that is, and may not even know of what an important role that company had played in their parents' lives. Now, the flight from Miami to Caracas was delightful, and I got business class, and we arrived at Caracas about 30 minutes early. I thought more about this later. I was met by a pilot with shoulder boards showing he was a captain. He was young, and I learned his name was William. He's 50 years old and lost his job on the Saturday before I got down there. And he was a co-pilot for Alfredo, the pilot. He was very upset and told me in Spanish, which I didn't understand. I only knew that he was fired. About Alfredo, he's 64 years old and has flown for several airlines. The main one was Viasa, which was a Venezuelan airline that went out of business. He's flown all over South America and Europe with these airlines. We had many stories to share, like the approach into Quito. And his son is a G2 pilot out of Miami. Alfredo speaks very little English, but we managed to communicate in English in the beginning. But as my Spanish improved, our communication reverted to Spanglish. I was surprised at how much of my Spanish returned. It still was not enough to feel comfortable. It is extremely tiring when you're trying to make others understand you and you them with the language differences. We flew from Caracas to Merida in their airplane, which is an aerocommander with turboprop engines. The airplane performed far better than I expected, and I found it had engines that were overpowered for the airplane. We were cruising at 300 knots, and it climbed at 2,500 feet a minute. Now, about the airplane, it's registered in the U.S. I learned the owner wanted a U.S.-registered airplane because he believed that he may have to leave the country in a hurry because of the political situation in Venezuela. And he did not want a problem with a Venezuelan airplane coming to the U.S. Mm-mm. Now, we landed in Merida, where the altitude is 5,100 feet, and it's absolutely beautiful, and it sits in between mountains on either side of the valley that rise above 14,000 feet. It rains every night, and the tops of the mountains, you can see a dusting of snow. I have to say that this was one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen, and that's saying a lot. Alfredo took me to a hotel, which was very nice, and it was a one-level structure and several wings, and the gardens in the center court. Day two. Now, the plan was to fly to a city nearby that was 20 minutes in the airplane. Alfredo told me he would pick me up at 6:30 a.m., and we'd have breakfast. Well, he showed up at 6 o'clock. I thought that was surprising. I also left a wake-up call for 5:30, and they called me at 5 o'clock. This was strange, but I let it ride. It was decided to fly to this city, which is San Cristobal. And the reason we were going there, because there was a hangar where we could pull the airplane in and hook it up to a ground power unit so we could use the system on the airplane without running the batteries down. Now, as we approached San Cristobal, I saw the runway, and I thought, that's not where we're going, surely. Well, we landed at, and it was so small that had I known ahead of time, I would have chosen not to go, because the runway was only 2,200 feet. We began the training. We taxied up to the hangar, put the airplane in a hangar, and we started the training about 10 o'clock. Both pilots were seated at the table, and we had two units in front of them on a table. As we would go through the exercises, we would stop so Alfredo could speak in Spanish to William, who did not speak a word of English. This city in San Cristobal is located only about 15 miles from the Colombian border. Also, the runway is only about 2,200 feet, as I mentioned. When I saw it, I did not think that the runway was long enough and that we were going to land, but I was wrong. Keep in mind, this is about half the length of the Pinehurst Airport and a little over half the length of the Hilton Head Airport. It took maximum effort to get it stopped. Now, there was also a National Guard unit based at the airport, which was next door to the hangar we were in. The hangar we were in only had the swing chain link fence for a front door. About 12 o'clock, there appeared about 30 to 40 soldiers in flak jackets carrying rifles. They began placing yellow tape around the entire ramp area. And shortly there were three tractor trailers, that drove up in front of the hangar next to ours. They pulled up tarps exposing trailers full of ammunition to be unloaded in the hangar. And there were guards placed in front of our hangar, and when they arrived, they pointed their guns at us, assault rifles, and said we could not leave. Now, this lasted for about an hour and a half before we got out of there and they let us leave for lunch. Some speculated that this ammunition was destined for the communist rebel group fighting in Colombia, which was supported by Chavez of Venezuela. As a side note, as we talked out of Caracas Airport the first day, we passed a large Airbus, and Alfredo pointed out that that was their equivalent to their Air Force One, but he commented that Air Force One carries a president in our country, and theirs carries animals. It surprised me that he would make such a comment, given the political situation down there. Needless to support, he did not support Chavez. It gave me a long measure of discomfort to be confined by soldiers holding rifles. While I did not express this to my host, it was nonetheless disquieting. I then realized how vulnerable I was in this country, not being able to communicate in the language and the reality of not having the comfort of another person, such as a crew member or company, even in the U.S. Embassy, to hold my hand. Accompanying us to San Cristobal was the owner and his wife. We had decided to spend the night in that city, but the owner decided he wanted to get back to Merida that night, and we returned, and Alfredo requested that I sit in the right seat and do some training on the way back. This I did, and the takeoff was a concern, but the normal takeoff speed or rotation speed is about 100 knots. Well, we reached 90 knots, and we were able to, we had to rotate and fly because there was no more runway. The rest of the trip was uneventful, except William learned that he lost his job, and he was very upset. He had two sons from a first marriage, one 7-year-old, and second by his wife, who was pregnant. I spent all day Saturday with Alfredo training. It required a lot of repeating exercises, and much of it was because of the language. Sunday, I was scheduled to leave at 2 o'clock and was on standby, and the flight went out full, and I did not get out until 6 o'clock. Now, Alfredo had warned me about getting, when I got to Caracas, that there was only certain cabs that I should get to carry me into the hotel, because others, it was not even safe to get in, to even talk to the drivers. So I get in this cab, and I look up in his sun visor, and I see some CDs there that were labeled the Gaithers. Now, I'm sure all of you know who the Gaithers are. They are a longtime singing group out of Indiana that sing gospel music. And so this is very comforting, because I mentioned it to him, and he said, soy cristiana, y usted. I'm a Christian, are you? And I said, yes. And that was comforting. And I asked him if he would come get me the next morning, and he agreed to. And I was very happy to see him the next morning, because I would not have to go out and chase down another cab that might take me off to the boondocks. And my wife had already told me that if I was kidnapped over there, that just tell them right off the bat that there's no money, so you might as well go ahead and shoot me.
For the money?
Does that make you feel wanted, Steve?
Just so you know, they do have kidnap insurance when you travel, by the way.
No, I didn't have. I didn't know that. It was a very interesting trip, and
wow.
Riding around in a car in the country was kind of hair-raising. First of all, they have no one-way streets, and crossing streets are intermingled with pedestrians, intersections. There's not a single sign on any street, and there's not a single traffic policeman that you see anywhere.
No.
But also, there was not a single accident that I ever saw.
Wow.
So I got back home, and I told my children of my incident with a cab driver, and they also, Dad, that was the guardian angel we prayed for of you.
You know,
so
Steve,
that was my experience.
Steve, the point of the story
yes.
is also that when you are in aviation as a pilot, a mechanic, or whatever, your employment is in aviation, you tend to accept any challenge or any job that's offered to you. And
that's very
like
true.
You did that
very
because,
true.
Yeah, I see, especially if you fly airplanes, I don't care how, what is the word, clandestine? Is that the word that we use?
Clandestine.
Yeah, we'll accept it because, by golly, we love airplanes and we love to fly. We love maintenance and we love to maintain airplanes. We don't give a darn what the operation is. We're going to go. We're going to do it.
Yeah, and sometimes we develop a false sense of security, which maybe I had that time, but it proved to be okay.
You know, when I was a youngster, I used to hear Sky King, Sky King on the radio. Wow, what adventures those were.
Are either Hop Harrigan, we're coming in. Chuck, you've got a story that I'm sure you'd like to tell us. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, this is down in Miami, the west end of the field, back in, I guess this is probably late 60s, early 70s. I got a call from a friend of mine that told me that he had a job down at the pea patch. Now, I don't know if you guys ever remember flying over the pea patch, but that's the old planes used to stack up down there at the west end of the fence at Miami International Airport.
Cockroach Corner.
And I got down, and he says, it's just a quick job for the day. And he says, go down there and see this guy, and he'll tell you what to do. So I get down there, and here's a DC-6 sitting there in the pea patch. And the guy's telling me, okay, this job is for $200. And I'm saying, what do you want me to do for $200? He says, see the cargo sill? I said, yeah. He says, I want you to cut back 8 inches to the production line and cut the sill out of that airplane for the cargo door. What they were doing was they were selling the airplane by pieces. And they sold the door, but with the door that they had to have the dollar sill to match it because the one it didn't fit for some reason. So the guy come back and he wanted the door sill. So I sat there with one of those commercial that has an abrasive wheel to it. You know, they use them to cut sidewalks and driveways and,
oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
The street. You know, they're big, probably a 1-inch, you know, 1-foot blade on this thing. And I had to go back to where the rivets were. That's where the production line was, and cut maybe an inch before that. And it took me all day. And what I had to do was tie a strap on me around my waist, and they put a rope around the other side of the airplane, and I stepped into where the windows were on the side of this airplane with this big saw all day long. All you could hear was just Chucky and this little saw going all up and going around and coming down. So then they took a rope and put it in the middle as I come down to the opposite side of the airplane, and then I had to cut underneath the door sill because they wanted all that. So these other two guys came with a crane and held the top up there while I cut the bottom out. And as I cut the bottom out, of course, it swung out, and I almost got knocked off this ladder that I had. I actually had to jump off the ladder. And so I turned around, and I told the guy driving the tractor, I says, you know, you're a dumbass. Didn't you know that thing was going to swing out and knock me off the ladder? He said, yeah, but I thought you knew you would be a real good jumper. So that's the end of that little story. But we had a lot of those stories like that down at the pea patch.
Well, Chuck, interesting story. And I've got a quick one. We're just about to run out of time, but my story was about Eastern Airlines and how they treated me as a brand new hire with the company. And I knew after this experience that I had with Eastern Airlines that I wanted to stay with this company as long as I possibly could. And as it turned out, I stayed until March of 1989. But when I was first hired, I was based in Washington, D.C., and my wife was still living in Miami, Florida, where I was in the airplane business, or I was chief pilot of one of the flight schools down in Opelika and Tamiami Airport. And when I was hired, I flew Convair 440s, and I was on a trip from Washington before I relocated my family to Washington, D.C. I was on a trip down to Miami where we had a good layover, and we made, I don't know, maybe five stops on, I remember the flight number, 688, Eastern Flight 688, which was a Convair 440, and I was the co-pilot. And coming into Jacksonville, which was about halfway, I got a call when I did the in-range check to find out how much fuel we're going to take outbound from operations asking me, the first officer, to come into operations. They had a message for me. And I went into operations when we landed, and the message was that my wife had a cerebral hemorrhage back in Annandale, Virginia, excuse me, and that she was on the critical list at the Fairfax Hospital, and that they had arranged for me to be on a flight northbound back to Annandale to be with my wife and children. My son was 3 years old, and my daughter was 3 months old, and they had a flight schedule for me to turn around on a DC-7 and fly back from Jacksonville nonstop to Washington, D.C. on that normal flight, regular flight. So they had to delay the Convair flight that I was on that continued on to Miami and replace me with a new first officer out of Atlanta. But that's the way the company operated. They took care of its own people. And my wife recovered, and they let me off as a brand-new co-pilot, still on probation, which probations for co-pilots at that time, I believe, was about 15 months that we were on probation before they decided whether we had a permanent status or we had venue with Eastern Airlines. We were going to stay with Eastern. And so that's the way the company was. And these are the good thoughts that I have about Eastern. And, of course, we have some great memories about our working with other Eastern people that we'd like to share. And some of the stories you've heard tonight just go up for it's just a remarkable company. And I believe that's why we might have a chance in the very near future, hopefully this coming year, to see the Eastern logo once again fly the skies of at least from Miami to Central, South, and the Caribbean area, America. So that's my little story. I've shortened it up a little bit, but it was a great company, and that's why I believe that people still today that have ever been associated with Eastern Airlines just think of it as part of their family.
Neil, this
That's
is
all
Jim.
I've got to say.
This is Jim.
Yeah.
Can I know that we're almost out of time this evening, but I want to tell a story at the next Eastern episode about Eastern Airlines before movies. That's my title, Before Movies. Okay?
Okay, Jim. Is it a long story? Because we've got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, I could tell it now, I guess. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Before movies, Eastern realizing the difficulty that we had in enticing people out of the railroads and out of the buses, we wanted to try to put them at ease. So someone in the home office said, okay, why don't we develop a group of what we would like to call social directors on our flights? So they took a few of us, my being one of them, of course, and they took us to a place in New York City called After Six. They outfitted us with a beautiful seersucker jacket, tux trousers, a cummerbund, a beautiful white ruffled shirt, a bow tie, and the shiniest shoes I'd ever seen. And they said, okay, Jim, your trip is going to be from Boston to Miami on this particular flight. So the flight left at 9 o'clock in the evening. So I was, after I'm all dressed and ready to go, I was living in Alexandria, Virginia at the time. And so I used to take the air shuttle from National Airport up to Boston. I'd get off the airplane and go to the area where my flight was due to leave, and they were serving punch and cookies, not only to the passengers, but to all the family members who were seeing them off. And I was standing there in my tux and so on, greeting everyone and telling them how wonderful Eastern Airlines was. Now, I also had in the background a great big board with holes in it. I was going to play bingo in flight. And I told the folks, watch for me to come on after the stewardess had made their announcements, after the captain had made his announcements, because we're going to play bingo, and you will not believe the beautiful prizes we have. We have free water ski lessons at Lee's Ski School in Biscayne Boulevard. We had a free trip for two to the Bahamas for 2 days. We had dinner at some of the finest restaurants in Miami and on Miami Beach. Wow. Okay, so 9 o'clock came. We all boarded the flight and took off. And the stewardess said, why don't you sit back here? I was in the jump seat in a DC-8 and having a ball. Well, the crew would all make their announcements. And, okay, now here's your social director. I would introduce myself. And I would start reading off the prizes we're going to give out. Your stewardess is going to give you a bingo card, so on and so forth. Wow, a couple of people declined the card. You're invading my privacy. So they didn't get a card. But as soon as they started hearing the people winning and what they were winning, they called and asked for a card. Well, we're on our way, and all of a sudden, my bingo board is pretty full, and we hit some rough air. Wow, I'm in the tail, and the bingo board went up in the air, and all the balls flew off the place. And I thought, wow, what am I going to do now? Well, I just kept calling numbers, and at that particular time, we had four winners. One of the winners was a young couple on their honeymoon. I gave them the trip to the Bahamas. Another one was so on and so forth. But let me mention, before that particular trip, we had in the home office, they brought us in and said, how are things going, guys? And I said, fine, as far as my trip is concerned. And one of the other guys said, geez, I don't know. He says, I announced the Lee's Ski School on Biscayne Boulevard, and it was an 88-year-old woman who won the prize. I said, hey, that's not the way you run the program. You don't announce the prize in advance. Well, anyway, we did that for 6 weeks. I can't tell you what the end result was, except it was before movies, and I loved every minute of that. Oh, one thing. I gave a couple the trip to the Bahamas. And, of course, I ended up at the International Hotel in Miami right at the airport because I had to leave the next morning to get back up north. And I'm standing in line for this flight, and a couple came up and said, pardon me, aren't you the social director for Eastern Airlines? I said, yes. I said, what can I do for you? Wow, we got to go to the Bahamas, but we got to where we were supposed to be, and the boat was in dry dock, so we never got to take the trip. Oh, God, I said, well, I tell you what, give me your name and address. When I got back to the home office, I said to the guys running the program, you got to send this couple to Puerto Rico on us, or Mexico City, one or the other. They did, and they had a ball, and they wrote me a nice letter. That was my one of my experiences. Hey, I think I hear champagne music in the background. Well, yeah. There's that background music. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and we look forward to being with you once again. Next week, same time, same station, on the radio voice of Eastern Airlines, where we'll bring you another exciting Eastern Airlines radio broadcast. We wish you a very successful week, and whatever you undertake to do, just remember, keep the blue side up, have safe airspeed, and plenty of altitude. And from all of us, good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern family.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Aren't we having fun?
Oh. I agree, Neil. It's a ball. It's a ball.